At Arizona State University, we've made online education better, smarter, and more personalized so you can go further in your aspiring field.
I decided to pursue medicine once I realized that ASU did have the online program for biological sciences. You're still required to learn the same curriculum. You're still being tested on the same content that anyone would be tested on in person. The comprehensiveness of the program prepared me so well for medical school.
Explore over 350 plus programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Oh, when the singers were set up by the man of God, singing praise to his holy name, the elders are to keep them in the way and to preach the word of God.
Welcome to another episode of the Chorister's Lounge. My name is Brother Matthew Caldwell, and I am honored and pleased and counted all joy and a privilege today to be joined by a man who has certainly set himself apart as an absolute asset to the Church of God and Saints of Christ in so many different ways, but he set himself apart through his years of service as a chorister. And it is an honor to be able just to spend a little time with Evangelist Judah Amos Person Jr. And welcome him into the Chorister's Lounge. Evangelist, it is an honor to have you, and welcome to the lounge today, sir.
Thank you, Brother Matthew. Thank you, sir. It is my honor to be with you today, indeed.
And I'm humbled by this opportunity to say this is the first. It is. It's the first.
Yes, indeed. Sir. Yes, sir. Well, we are so glad to have you. And of course, for those of you that are watching in the virtual world, we certainly want to continue to encourage you to like, share, and subscribe to this Chorister's Lounge channel. And just drop a comment, you know, in the chat if you're so inclined to do so. We certainly want to keep everything undergirded with that spirit of positivity, okay. You know, yeah. Even in those in the chat, and they just keep it undergirded with that dynamic God consciousness as well. But Evangelist, just certainly wanted to just take a little opportunity, a little time here just to talk about your journey as a chorister. So we're going to jump into the interview portion of today's episode. And the way that I like to start these conversations in this interview session, I just kind of like to just, you know, pose the question, and we'll do the same thing with you, Evangelist. When, where, and by whom were you appointed a chorister?
Okay. I was appointed a chorister in Baltimore, Maryland, somewhere in the year around 1963. May have happened before that. Because I landed in Baltimore in 1959, moved from Norfolk, there from Norfolk. And it was then that my association with the Baltimore Tabernacle came into being. At that time, the pastor was, I believe, was Elder Charles Johnson. And shortly after I got there, Evangelist at Large Joseph Stevenson became the overseer. And shortly after he got there, I sort of fell into the position of helping with the choir, and I was singing in the choir, and I did some directing with the choir, sharing the duties with the other choristers that were there. And eventually they kind of faded from the picture. And of course, it was kind of evident to me that something was looming. And I kind of was a little trembling because I really didn't feel worthy or capable, because I'd seen so many great choristers in this organization. That Evangelist Stevenson asked me to be the chorister, Evangelist Lars Stevenson. So somewhere around 1960, 63, I became the director in Baltimore for about 19 years, I think, before I eventually migrated to North Carolina. And Mother Sarah Purse and I, we didn't make it back. The plan was to come back after I finished school, but that didn't happen. So,
yes, sir.
But I'm probably the Lord. I don't believe in coincidences or happenstance. I think it was destined for me to be where I was, at the time I was, when I was, and in the associations I had that grew and nurtured me. I believe it was God's hand in the picture all the time.
Yes, sir.
So I'm comfortable, you know, where I wind up.
Yes, sir. Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah. Indeed.
So that's how I got there, Brother Matthew. And
yes, sir.
And Stevenson, even after I was ordained an elder, he said, look, he said, Amos, that's what he used to call me. For some reason, my name got changed from Amos to Judah.
Yes, sir.
That transition. he said, I know you're a minister, and you can come in the pulpit anytime you want. He said, but I'd like for you to continue to take care of the choir. Be that. So I said, fine. Yes, sir, I'll do that. So for the next 3 years, even though I was a minister, I was sitting as the other ministers in the choir did, Elder Stevenson, Elder Plummer, and Elder, they had seats in the choir, although they were an Elder Carey, like people like that. They elders, but yet they had charge of the choir.
Yes,
they
sir.
Had that responsibility.
Yes, sir.
So that's how that worked out.
Yes, sir. That's beautiful, beautiful. And I think you were part of that illustrious group of 420 elders, if I'm not mistaken. That
yes,
included,
I was.
You know, included Elder yes. Thomas Stevenson, Elder Charles David Plummer, Evangelist Moses Farrar, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir.
So,
and
yes, sir.
C. Farrar.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Got
so,
us all. Yeah.
Let me backtrack a little bit. Now, what can you tell me about your time in the choir previous to your appointment as a director? Do you remember, you know, what year or how old you were when you were placed in the choir?
I was about 13 in Norfolk, Virginia. I was put in the choir, and I was appointed a shepherd in the choir. And I shared those duties with another boyhood friend who I loved very much, who left us much too soon. His name was Melvin Heidelberg. And I got very close to the Heidelberg family, and Melvin and I were co-shepherds, if you will.
Yes, sir.
And after Melvin passed, I became the shepherd in the choir there in Norfolk. And from there, that was my earliest association with the choir. And in the interim there, I saw my uncle, Evangelist Lodge, J.U.O. Smith, and another uncle, Evangelist Andrew Person, in the choir. They were directing, and Evangelist Andrew Person was a shepherd. So I had a lot of elbow, you know, rubbing and association that helped me along. And that's when I really fell in love with the beauty and the movement and the role that the choir played in the worship.
Yes, sir.
And I took my job as a shepherd very seriously. And I began to realize that it took on sort of a spiritual nature with me. And I really thoroughly went about it and went at it in a spiritual way, remembering all the time that what I represented as the shepherd was an important job in looking out for the choir. I
yes,
really
sir.
Got protective of the choir, of the singers. And I would really, if somebody walked toward the choir and they didn't belong, I stopped them, man. If I had my staff, I stopped them.
Yes, sir.
Child, adult, said, you know, what do you need? What do you want? Why are you here? And they would have to get by, not get by me, but they have to stop and recognize me for who I was and where
yes,
I was.
Sir.
Then I would say, okay, I'll take a message, or I'd get that person's attention. They would come out. So that's how I came into it. And then as I became a chorister, I really began, and I hope I'm not jumping ahead too far.
Yes, sir.
When I became a chorister, I really realized how important, it really hit me, how essential the role of the choir was to the quality, dignity, and edification of our worship.
Yes, sir.
And I watched the great choristers that I had the privilege of seeing and working with. And I'll tell anyone and everyone that my mentor, my hero, was Ella Thomas Stevenson. I spent probably 15 years working with and about and around him because he lived in Washington, D.C. And of course, he was just a hop, skip, and a jump from Baltimore, so to speak. And as I was working with the choir there in Baltimore, I could call him at any time, any hour of the day or week or night, ask questions, or I could ask, look, Ella Stevens, can you come over? I'm working on this. Can you come over and say, yeah, sure, Amos, I'll be over. And he would come over and I would have the opportunity to sit with him and work with him. And then Saturday nights after service, we would sing from sundown to the wee hours of the morning. And he'd be teaching and he'd be molding. I didn't know what was going on then, but he would be teaching and molding. And our relationship got very, very close. I loved him dearly. I loved him. I got a chance to see him operate. And one thing that humbled me was one time when I was living in Norfolk, Rabbi E.T. Plummer had a program on television and on radio. And he had the Belleville Choir singing with him during the program. So one time I was over there and Elder Stevens said, Amos, I was just standing around. He said, would you like to sing with us? And I said, sure, yes, sir. So I started singing with the Belleville Choir. And then he asked me when the choir was separate from the Belleville a cappella choir. He asked me to sing with them. And I just, well, you couldn't tell me nothing. I was, I was jacked.
Sure, so yes, sir.
I really felt, wow, I'm singing with the Belleville Choir chorus. These are the top, this is the cream of the crop.
Yes,
in
sir.
In terms of music in the church. And I'm working with the man who has it, you know, up here and in his heart, Ella Stevenson.
Yes, sir.
I got to see some great things that turned my heart and soul to the choir. And right now, I say all the time, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing as a minister, I'd be right down there with you.
Yes, sir.
Right down there in the mix, trying to do what I could to glorify and magnify the worship.
Yes, sir.
And as a chorister, I remember that it's not about me. There's nothing to do with me. It's about the worship. It's about the service. And I felt like I had an obligation and a charge as a chorister to approach it as a minister of music, as so to speak. And sometime around Wednesday, I'd be off to myself and I'd like working on a sermon. And of course, it really came home to me when I would sing a song or start a song in the choir. And then right after that, Ed Vanden Stevens say, you know, Amos, I was thinking about that song. I was going to ask you to sing that song.
Yes, sir.
And I'm sure.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
You had that experience. And when that spiritual connection is made, Matthew, when that spiritual connection is made and the chorister and the pastor are, shall we say, one. So
yes, sir.
When they are united in spirit, there's nothing more heavenly, spiritual, and edifying. Did you see that thing come together and know that you have been in step with the Spirit, as it were? And you have to approach it in a spiritual way. It's not about me. It's not about the court. I just happen to be the one out there with the stick who is a vehicle for making sure that what the pastor needs and what the congregation needs, I have some role in putting that out and making sure it gets to them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So that's, I love that, evangelist. And there are three things that you mentioned I want to touch back to.
Okay.
Talk to me a little bit more just about how you see the progression, because a lot of our choristers did start as shepherds, all right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you see your time as a shepherd kind of helping to, or what tools did you bring from your time as a shepherd to your elevation as a chorister?
My time as a shepherd was invaluable. First of all, it taught me to look outside of myself and remember that I'm just one part of it, but I have a group of singers who are looking to me, and there's nothing that grabbed me more than as a shepherd than to be marching and to look back and to see all of the singers who are watching what I do. They can't see the course, so they're watching me. I am the second baton, so to speak.
Mm.
I give signals. I have certain moves I make with the staff that let the singers know what's coming.
Yes,
they
sir.
Can't see the course, so then the staff is what they watch. So my role as a shepherd was invaluable to getting me ready for my role as a chorister.
Mm-hmm.
And that progression from a shepherd to a chorister to the pulpit was a transition which I thank God for every day, because it had my time as a shepherd and as a chorister informs my role as a minister and as a pastor. It informs what I do and how I act and react.
Yes, sir.
So one of my greatest experiences with the choir was to a choir the size of Belleville can be, when I was young, can be intimidating, as any large choir can be. But if you're confident, you're standing in front of the choir and you know what you know, and you convey that and communicate that to the singers, and they want to do what you want. They want to give you the right thing. They don't want to mess up. But if I'm tentative, they're going to be tentative. In order for me to be sure and to be in the spirit, I had to start thinking about my role as a chorister before Friday night, beginning of Sabbath. I started thinking about it before Sabbath morning. I started thinking about it Tuesday night. And that's from there, it went and built and built and grew and ballooned and blossomed till beginning of Sabbath. I was wide open, so to speak, terms of I can't wait to get there to do what I can do to help the service be all that the pastor or the members needed to be.
Yes, sir. Absolutely beautiful. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then doubling back to, and you already spoke about Elder Stevenson, and in addition to Elder Stevenson, were there any other mentors or musical inspirations that you had along your journey as a chorister?
Yes, sir. Evangelist Moses Farrar was one of my heroes as well. And I could ask him anytime to sing something for me, or to how does this go, or how does that go? And he would give. He is so precise in his music, and even his composers have those little subtle moves that if you listen carefully, or if you don't listen carefully, you'll miss it. But when you hear it, it sounds good. But you may not be aware that something moved over there in the alto side that you may not, that wasn't obvious. He didn't point to him, but there was a move made in the soprano, alto, or bass all by themselves that changed the tenor or tone of that chord. So Evangelist Moses Farrar and Brother Jacob Bukow, I got a chance to spend some time with him as well. And of course, the only other person I can think about that I didn't get a chance to spend a lot of time around them, who taught me some things about music, was Ella Judah Plummer.
Mm.
Going to Belleville for rehearsals. One time we were in rehearsal, and Ella Stevenson was practicing with the choir chorus, and some note that he wanted the sopranos to hit, somebody couldn't quite hit it, and they squeal. it was sharp or flat, but it wasn't on what Elder Stevens was wanting. He couldn't figure it out. So Elder Judah walked up from the back of the tabernacle and said, what's the matter? And Elder Stevens told him. He said, okay. He said, hit it again. They started song again. He turned his back and walked toward the back of the tabernacle and stopped facing the door, not the choir, but his back to the choir. He turned around and looked at a certain thing and said, you be quiet, hold up. Hit it again. He turned back around, back to the choir. He did that about three times. Then finally he turned around. He said, you hold up, don't sing. And when they hit it that the next time, that squeal was gone. Mm. And he pointed, he said, that's your squealer. He used a term. And he was up front. Elder Judah was up front and he'd tell you like it was. And that was one experience I learned from him of being how precise the music can be. And if it's not there, he had the kind of ear, he could pick out a bad sound. And I'll share this with you. One time I was with Rabbi Levi, and we were talking about the choir. And he was talking about the straight singers like Brother Wesley Garris.
Yes.
And Elder Judah Plummer. And he said, and I could witness it. He said he never heard a song sung where the tenor was too high from Brother Wesley Garris. That was his shining star.
Yes, sir.
That was his talent. He said, and Elder Judah Plummer, he said Elder Judah Plummer's talent was you could sing a song to him for the first time and he could follow you. Mm. He'd hit the notes, he'd hit the name. And never having heard it before, that was his gift.
Yeah.
So, and then Elder Stevenson, he sort of had all of that. He wasn't a singer per se, but he was a great teacher.
Yes,
he
sir.
Could teach. And he told me, he said, Judah, if you want to be a good courser, you must learn to teach. You have to teach if you want to be a good courser. He said, you know, shaking the stick is one thing, you know, but if you want to be a good courser and have a good choir, you got to be able to teach.
Yes, sir.
And that's what and one other person, Brother Earl Williams.
Ah, yes, sir.
I can't begin. He'd say, now, you know, you got to come out and do this now because you're the man. You got it. They're looking to you. And he had this bass voice. He said, you know, this is what I want you to do. And he just kind of nudged and pushed me. Come on now, I want you to do it. And he would make me lead the choir in Washington when I'd go over there. And he pushed me out there, so to speak. Yeah. And
yes,
Washington
sir.
Was a choir that would intimidate a young chorister too.
Sure.
But he gave me the confidence. He, Elder Stevenson, and Brother Jacob Bukow, they gave me the confidence with the knowledge that they gave me. And Vannis Moses Farah was another one. Just
yes,
to name a few.
Yes, indeed. That is great. Those are some heavy hitters.
Yes, sir.
That
I was
all
blessed.
Left a tremendous, you know, imprint on mm-hmm. on the choirs of the Church of God and Saints of Christ. So just to have those as some of your mentors and inspirations, that's absolutely.
I was blessed.
Absolutely
I was
beautiful.
Blessed.
Yes, indeed. Now, are there any singers that stand out to you over the course of your time as a chorister? Any folks that were just memorable? Anyone? Any voices that we like? You mentioned about Brother Wesley Garris, you know, Elder William mm-hmm. Judah Plummer. These are voices that you know, folks in my age range and younger. You know, we don't know much about these voices. Mm-hmm. Are there any singers that come to mind? You know, over your time as a chorister that come across as memorable?
Yes, sir. St. Sarah Brent.
Ah.
St. Sheba Griffin.
Yes, sir.
St. Dorothy Wagner. Brother Ray Swan, who was the head bass. Brother Solomon Carey. St. Jeanette Carey. These were people that I saw do things with music. That boggled my mind musically. I was just amazed at the talent that was back there on that bass row, the tenor row, the altos, and there were some great singers. I mean, I used to hear Saint Margaret Bordley and Saint Sheba Hurt, two of the greatest high altos I had ever heard in the church. And yes, I got a chance to sit and listen to them fly up in the ceilings musically, so to speak, above
yes,
everybody else. And they weren't loud, but you could hear them at times. And if you well, The other thing that Elder Stevenson taught me, he taught me to listen for to pick out what various singers were doing at any given time. What he would, one exercise he would do with me, if I could call it exercise, we'd be singing a song and I'd be singing with him. He said, hold it, stop. He said, what's the next note? I said, what do you mean? He said, what's the next note? You stopped here, what's the next note? And he would make me give him every note, of each note of the bass, alto, tenor, and soprano, the next note. He said, he stopped. He says, what's the next note? And he trained me to listen for sounds and to know when a singer, if a singer left from where they needed to be, how to go get that singer musically, go get them musically and bring them back to where you wanted, where they needed to be. Mm. That's the kind of inside training that I gleaned, and it helped me tremendously. It's been invaluable.
Yes, sir.
Especially when it came to working outside the choir with the chorus.
Yeah.
The chorus singing is a little bit different. Carried over to my work in the chorus, with chorus. And I've had the honor and privilege of working with choruses, so to speak, Southern Pines. We had the Mid-South acapella singers.
Mm.
In Baltimore, we had the Baltimore Chorale Society that one Sunday morning we were singing. To give you a feel for where I am, one Sunday morning we were singing at a prayer breakfast that Rabbi A.Z. Plummer was there. And after we finished, he said to us, and he looked at me, he said, you all could sing anywhere. Now, here's a man who knew music. He came up with the great ones, so to speak, the goats.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Yes, greatest of all time, you know, the goats of the church.
Yes, sir.
He came up with them, and he was one of them in terms of his ability to move around with the choir and the singers. And he said, you can sing anywhere. He said, but you must keep practicing. You must rehearse. Make the group what it needs to be. That's how my journey has been in the Church of God and Saints of Christ. And I love the choir.
Yes, sir.
Love it. And I love what I'm also doing ministerially.
Yes,
but
sir.
But I really genuinely love the choir. All are my peeps.
Yes, sir.
I love you.
Yes, indeed. Sir. Yes, sir. We love you right back, Evangelist. Now, for the sake of maybe, like I said, those maybe mm-hmm. in my age group and younger, how do mm-hmm. you see the function of a chorus being different from the function of our choirs? How do you see the difference? I think you mentioned it, but I just kind of mm-hmm. wanted to focus in on that a little bit more.
Yes. The function of the chorus gives the choir, the singers who may transition. There's some singers who work in the chorus that did not sing in the choir. Mm. I didn't hold that against them that they wanted to sing. I didn't say, well, you got to be a member of the choir before I can use you in the chorus. That didn't matter to me. All I worried about was their spirit.
Yeah.
Did they have the right spirit to function in either role? The problem, I won't say the problem, but the apprehension I have is that I have to make sure that I don't bring the choral aspect into the choir. If you understand what I'm saying, the things I might do chorally out there, you know, just, so I say, musically messing around, I wouldn't do that in choir, because I can't do that. I can't afford, and I, as a chorister, couldn't afford to let that happen. If I saw a singer and they were doing something that I knew they brought from the chorus, I'd look at them and just kind of, no, I'm sorry, no, don't want that. Stay home, so to speak. Stay home. Stay with the true nature and spirit of the composer. Remember that. You don't have the privilege of doing that in the choir. In the choral, we can play around. I might say, okay, that's good. Stay there. Do that note again. I like that. And I gave, there was some opportunities for, shall we say, improvisation.
Sure.
And but in the choir, you can't improvise. You can let the spirit guide you in certain ways, but the basic spirit of the music is still there. Mm-hmm. I know that I've done it with the choir. Like I do a refrain several times over and over and over. Yes, I've changed it from the original composure, but the spirit of what I'm doing is right, is still there. The principle is there. My method of getting it to the pastor or the choir, I mean, or the congregation is there. My methods and procedures may change, but the spirit of what I'm trying to do and what the music is saying, I try to maintain that.
Yes, sir.
Make sure that that's number one. That's my number one concern.
Yes, sir.
That the spirit of the composer and the spirit of the service stays there, and that I don't bring the freewheeling attitude of the chorus,
yes,
so to
sir.
Speak. They both have their places into the choir.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I must be on guard against that. Yes, sir. That's
beautiful,
it.
Beautiful, beautiful. So then
as you
transitioned, you know, from the choir, you know, to the pulpit, and I'm going to kind of ask this question from your perspective now as a minister. And you think you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but how can we as choristers support the pulpit, support the pastors, just be of better service to the ministers that are in charge? Or how do you see that relationship between pulpit and chorister?
I see that relationship being critical, absolutely critical. If, as a chorister, I have problems, quote unquote problems, with the local overseer, the pastor, that does not lend itself to a spiritual connection because I got a problem with him as an individual. We all have our idiosyncrasies, our likes and our dislikes. But I have to make sure that whatever I may have a problem with in terms of as a chorister to a pastor or vice versa, that I don't let that interfere with that spirit. It's a delicately engendered relationship. And what I mean by delicately engendered, it is important that they both be on the, shall we say, same page spiritually.
Yes, sir.
It is important that they communicate, even though it may be nonverbal in the service.
Yes, sir.
That they communicate and that the chorister remembers that the pastor, quote unquote, is in charge of the worship.
Yes, sir.
He can help the pastor and the pastor can help him or her. So that's what I mean when I say delicately, they've got to be able to spiritually read each other.
Yes.
It is good when they can spiritually read each other. And the pastor is asked for a song, and the chorister, she hits it. And then after that, the chorister gets a signal, that, so to speak, from the pastor, and they go to that song, or they go to a scripture, or a word of inspiration, or sermonically, they go to a place where the chorister pushed or nudge them with the music.
Yes,
and
sir.
Vice versa. So it is a delicately engendered. It's a ballet, so to speak, between
yes,
the chorister and the overseer, or the person in charge of the worship. He or she, as a pastor, he or she as a chorister, must work on that relationship and make sure that I made sure that I realized and recognized the fact this is not about Judah Person. Matter of fact, you're the least important one in here right now. This is about what is going to happen when they say now unto him, when this service closes.
Yes, sir.
What are the pastor going to say? What are the members going to say? Not about me, but about the service.
Yes,
did
sir.
It do what God wanted it to do?
Yes, sir.
And that's what motivated me. And that's what motivates me now as a pastor to take that relationship that I realized was so important from a chorister to a pastor and reverse it.
Yes, sir.
And remember, as a pastor, I have an obligation. If I can share something or nudge the music in a certain direction that helped me do what God has placed on my heart to do for that particular worship, I must be open to that.
Yes, sir.
So I've started a song and I get a signal from the overseer or the pastor that he or she doesn't want that. And I can read them and say, okay, what else do I have in my repertoire? And I go until I find, and it's something, it's funny. And you, I think I'll say this, you know, when you're singing a song, you know, when you hit a certain mellowness,
yes, sir,
a certain sweet spot, if you, you know, when you hit, and some says, stay right there.
Yes, sir.
Stay right there. Stay right. And you can kind of feel the floor kind of raise up and your spirit, the spirit is right. It's coming. You can feel it. As a courser, you have to be open to that.
Yes, sir.
But if I'm locked in on me, I'm not going to work. I'm not going to hear it. I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to be aware of its presence.
Yes, sir.
And sometimes it's just a breeze, spiritually speaking, that you get, not a windstorm, but you say, oh, that's it. Inside your head and heart, you say, Lord, help me. Help me.
Sir.
Help me to get this right. And
yes,
that's what has informed me. And I'm glad I made that journey from shepherd to courser to the ministry
and so on.
It has helped inform me.
Yes, sir.
In everything I do ministerially. The Bible informed what we do in the choir.
Yes, sir.
And then the choir informed what we do chorally from that aspect. So I think that will go a long way. It's good that we can go out in the community and do, I just came to say I love you.
Yes, sir.
It's good that we can go out and do that as much as we, just like we can go out and sing, you know, I love thy church, oh God.
Yes, sir.
So we've got to be able to channel that. When we can channel that and know that one is God-centered and the other is carnal, that's where we shine. And we can do that in the neighborhood and in the community.
Yes, sir.
We can take carnal work and turn it into something spiritual.
Yes, sir.
So I think we should go out. I think we should sing. I think we should use the gift that the prophet gave us and turn it into an instrument to draw people to us. Once we get them in, we can work on them.
Yes, sir.
Once we get them to show up, work on them may sound like a negative term.
Sure,
but we can have the gospel preached to them musically or spiritually or verbally.
Yes, sir.
By that instrument known as our worship service. So
yes,
I think we should go out and we should promote and we should be able to do everything we do with a degree of knowing that ultimately we're working for the house of God.
Yes, sir.
Ultimately.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I have three more questions for you. Only three? Listen, I don't want to keep you convinced. I could keep this going all day. I mean, there are so many things so many chords that you struck within me. Talk to me a little bit about your experiences with rehearsal in general. You know, how you felt that to be a necessary tool. Just what were your overall thoughts about the benefits, challenges, just anything that you can think of when it came to actually rehearsing, you know, with the choirs, from whatever standpoint, from, you know, your time as a shepherd, chorister, singer, all those things, even as a minister, the importance of, you know, rehearse. What can you tell me about that?
I think if the spirit of the chorister, if he or she has a spiritual, shall we say, directive, so to speak, in their head and heart when they enter into a rehearsal, I think you must enter into it with prayer and be prayerful about it, which is one reason why I think it was in the Constitution that the choir rehearsal is one of our, was a worship.
Yes, sir.
Five services.
Yes, indeed.
First day evening.
Yes, sir.
Choir rehearsal, beginning of Sabbath, Saturday, and Sunday night. Those five. They're all services.
Yes, sir.
And so I looked at the choir rehearsal as a service. And I conducted myself as such. We weren't out in the park. We're not sitting in some pavilion somewhere. We're most likely In the worship place, in church.
Yes, sir.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
In the temple, and we must come in with that attitude, or with that mantra, with that mindset, that this is we're rehearsing, but we should rehearse in a spiritual way. And I've been rehearsals, Brother Matthew, that got so hot that we almost had church.
Yes, sir.
I mean, the singing was so good, we didn't want, but I realized it was a rehearsal, and we kept going, and the song is ending, but people are still, they're still rocking. That's because I think we entered into it in a spiritual way.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you have a favorite song, a favorite choir song, songs, anything? What's some of your favorites?
Well, one of my favorite was one that I dearly love. Grandfather Abraham, he is a shelter in a weary land. I like that one. And of course, the chorus is, there's going to be,
weeping
and mourning.
Come on,
that day, weeping and mourning, I say.
Come on now.
And that's precious to me because one of the songs I sang when I led with the choir in Belleville, that was one of the first songs I led.
Okay.
And Elder Rabbi John Eaves told me this story. I didn't know. He said he was in the anteroom, and he heard the choir singing, and things were rolling pretty good. He stuck his head out the door to see what was going on, and he saw me in front of the choir, directing the choir. And I said, "You did?" And he told me that after I became the pastor of Jacksonville, North Florida. Mm-hmm. Didn't know about it. And I said, "Yeah, I do remember that." I said, "That was a frightening time for me. I didn't get a chance to tell you, but I was scared to death, you know."
Yes, sir.
I was scared to death out there because when things got rolling, I began to feel a little more comfortable. And of course, I looked at Elvis Stevenson, and he had a smile on his face.
Yeah,
he was just smiling. Yeah, it was to say, "Okay, all right." And I said to myself, okay, you know, I'm not going to die. Nobody's going to kill me. We're doing all right.
Yes, sir.
So that song's one of my favorite. And of course, I like the one that my sheep know my voice.
Yes, sir.
And a stranger. And I love them because it's got a lot of tenor in it. I used to like to hear, you know, the tenors in Belleville. I love that song. And I think I had a chance to lead it a couple of times with the choir there. And I like that because each section of the choir gets a chance to show off a little bit.
Yes, sir.
In that one. Yeah.
Yes,
so those
sir.
Are a couple of my favorites. And
beautiful.
And we all have our fallback, you know, the one that I love. Songs of praises
yes,
will
indeed.
I give to thee, but they that way.
Yes,
they
sir.
That wait upon. That's always a rocker for me. That's one of my fallbacks. So
yes, sir.
You may hear it. So
yes,
I love that one. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's hard, to sit still when that's really rolling. You know,
that's the
way,
truth. That's
you know,
the truth.
So that's hard.
That's the truth.
So I like that one.
And that's
of course,
the truth.
I like songs, a lot of music in it, like songs that Evangelist Moses composed. They have a lot of music in there.
Yes,
of course,
indeed.
Elder Stevenson. It was just, you know, he walked music just dropped off of him, so to speak. And it's kind of, he's dripping with music, you know, and he'd give you a tune tonight and come back tomorrow night and say, "No, that's not what I said." And you know, in your head and heart,
that's exactly
what
he
gave
me
today. Ain't what he gave me last night. Cause he was just dripping with music. It just came out of him. He was gifted. The man was truly gifted when he was asked to take care of the choir at 17 years old in Belleville.
Yes, sir.
I mean, 18 years old. I mean, how young can you be?
Yes, sir.
Under Grandfather Abraham, Rabbi A.J. Plummer, for him to say, "I want you to take care of the singers."
Yes, sir.
But he had the ability and capability to do it, and he did the job. I mean, he's one of the greatest that I've seen. I know we've had some great ones, but he was a GOAT. Definitely.
Yes, sir. So, Vangus, this has been wonderful. And again, for all of us
Thank you.
The virtual platform here, you know, we
Thank
are
you.
With Evangelist Judah Amos person, and he's given us just some of his journey as a chorister. Mm-hmm. And just as we close up, Evangelist, just want to give you an opportunity to just share any words that you have for the choristers of this generation, any words of encouragement, any just tips that you want to just give us as we continue to move forward in this musical ministry.
I encourage them to talk to the older choristers and singers. And I used to spend a lot of time just talking to singers, not necessarily directors, but talking to singers about the choir and letting them sing songs to me. And that was a great, great help to me. Before the tradition has a chance to fade, make sure it's nurtured and that it's watered by you getting as much from those who have walked this way, who have had that experience and have gotten the gifts and talents and learning from a higher source, that they can transfer that to you. I would encourage them to do that. And the second thing I would is to encourage them to realize that one of the most important components of our worship is our music. If you take the choir out of a worship service,
yes, sir,
it's hollow. You know, I don't care how hard I preach or how hard a minister may preach, without some music in our worship service,
yes, sir,
maybe in other denominations and traditions and other doctrines, it may not be as integral as our worship music is in our worship. But I think it was so important that that's why our choir is in front of the pulpit, not behind it. Our choir is in front of the pulpit. And that informed me to let me know that we are the first line of defense. We are the first ones out in the fight, in the field, in the battle.
Yes, sir.
For the hearts and souls of men and women.
Mm.
We are the first ones. And we are the ones that paved the way. I say we. I'm still a member of the choir.
Yes,
once a choir member, always a choir member.
Yes,
you can't
indeed
put me out. I'm not going anywhere.
Yes, indeed.
We are the ones that get the that dig the people up, so to speak. So that when the sower comes, the minister comes, or whoever's preaching, when they come and spread the gospel and spread the seed and the light, it takes root because the singers have dug it up, man.
Yes,
they have made it right.
Yes, sir.
They have made it right. And that's why I want to encourage them to realize you have an important role to play and that without you, the service will not be all that it can be. And with you, it'll be more than you expected it to be. And that's why I would say to them, realize that you are integral and you are important and that you must take it on as a spiritual role. That you are as much a part of the worship service as the sermon may be. And that's why I want to encourage them to take that on as a chorister, formal training, get some spirituality. And I think we should learn, stay in the scripture as well. That helps.
Yes, sir.
The more familiar you are with the scripture, the easier the songs come.
Yes, sir.
They come easier when you're familiar with the scripture from which they come.
Hmm.
They come easier. And it has helped me. And I would encourage that be part of any training, if any that the choir may offer, that they include that part of letting them know there's a carnal and there's a spiritual.
Yes, sir.
You need the spiritual to reach the carnal. And that's what the role of the choir is and always will be. And the prophet saw that and he knew that. And again, I say that's why we are in front of the pulpit.
Yes, sir.
And actually, I'll say that the choir is part of the pulpit.
Mm.
That's why in it everybody don't get to run up. It isn't allowed to walk up through or into the choir.
Yes, sir.
That's why the shepherd is where he is.
Yes, sir.
Which is where the shepherd sits, even out in the field to protect the sheep.
Yes,
you're
sir.
At the gate. You're there. So I would say that in closing, that's important. That's pivotal.
Yes, sir.
And primary. And a central focal point of our worship service is the relationship of the chorister with the choir, with the pastor, and the congregation.
Yes, sir.
And when you're right, beautiful. When the choir is on, there's nothing that raises the level of worship like good singing.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yes, indeed. Sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Evangelist, this has been an absolute pleasure. I just want to thank you for spending a little time with us here in the Choristers Lounge. And again, for those of you in the virtual world, just continue to spread the good word, spread the good news about this Choristers Lounge. Please share, subscribe, drop comments, like all these videos. We are being driven toward higher heights, and we're just glad to have you all with us. And Evangelist Judah Amos Person certainly gave us so many wonderful words of wisdom, you know, throughout the course of his journey from shepherd to chorister to minister. And what Evangelist gave us today is invaluable. For those of us choristers, those of us that are just interested in the music of the Church of God and Saints of Christ, let's really let those words that Evangelist gave us kind of find fertile soil in our hearts. And let us, you know, look forward to, you know, acting accordingly to what he gave us with some of those tips and some of those ideas in terms of how we can better ourselves as choristers and how we can really tap into the spirit as a chorister and really hone in on some of our skills. So Evangelist, thank you so much for taking the time with us today here in the Choristers Lounge. And to all you in the virtual world, we'll look forward to seeing you again when the Choristers Lounge opens back up. God bless and keep you is our prayer. Peace be unto you.
Thank you, Brother Matthew. Same to you and Brother Housen. Peace. Yeah.
So be it.
Though the storms keep on raging in my life, and sometimes it's hard to tell the night from day, still that a hope that lies within is reassured as I keep my eyes upon the distant shore. I know he'll lead me safely to that blessed place he has prepared. And if that storm don't cease, and if the wind keeps on a blowing in my life, my soul has been anchored in the Lord.
My Lord, my Lord, my Lord.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.